Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otto. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. Sabine Rat is a change manager and agile leadership coach with a specific focus on new ways of working. She is an accomplished public speaker and a guest lecturer in communication and leadership for master's students at the SRH Private University in Heidelberg, where she lives. As a mother of four who returned to work full-time during COVID, she's also making a name for herself in Germany as a thought leader and spokesperson for what she calls the motherhood penalty. In full transparency, Sabine and I used to be neighbors, sharing a driveway in Heidelberg. Our kitchen windows looked onto each other, giving a glimpse into each other's lives as mothers, negotiating family and work life. We were also two of the 8.3% of mothers in Germany with three or more children who work full-time, a shocking statistic. Sabine says as long as care work is systematically devalued, it is only a plaster on a gaping wound. Fix the system, not the women. Sabine Rat, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Thanks a lot for the great invitation, Charlotte. So you made my day. So thanks a lot for having me here.
Oh, it's such a pleasure, Sabine. And, you know, I look back on those days where we shared the driveway and where we were both kind of just trying to make it work with our large families and thinking about work and trying to make those decisions about how to go back into work full time. It's not easy for mothers in Germany, but it's not easy for full time working mothers all around the world. And I wanted to ask you, first of all, to explain the maternity leave system in Germany, because I think that mothers who work full time in the US and the UK look at Germany and think, what a brilliant model. If you get 3 years maternity leave per child, that's an incredibly compassionate and incredibly generous system, especially thinking of folks in the US who only have 2 weeks off per child. So let's talk a little bit about the German system so we understand the baseline that we're talking about.
Yeah, thanks a lot for mentioning it and highlighting it, because it's definitely different. So here in Germany, we have 1 year parental leave after having the birth. So we get 67% of our last payroll. And this is then for 1 month or for 14 months if the husband also, so if the father also is going into parental leave. And after that, we still have the opportunity to stay at home for, minimum 3 years. In some companies, it's also allowed to stay at home for, or it's also okay to stay at home for 6 years till your child is going to school. So on the one hand, it sounds great. On the other hand, there are a lot of consequences staying so long at home, having or earning no money in this time, and also having then in this time no career paths or developments in between. And what is very common in Germany, or I would say the work-life balance, so the having children and working, this is something that is meant here in Germany, that especially the woman, is going into part-time for very long time. So not only for 3 or 6 years, in general, we are talking about, I think 48% of all mothers are still working in part-time, or even if the youngest child is 12 years old. So this is a very long time, and in general, it's even longer. I know a lot of women, and also the statistics is like that, who are not working full time anymore, or at least they stay in part time for 20 years and longer. And this have a tremendous impact on your earning for life, so on your lifetime earning. And it's definitely not a good one. So it's not a good impact. And then you are in this situation that you're financially as well as, so there you have this dependency in general to your husband. And you also have not the chance to develop yourself in your career path. So these are two things, and these are then called the motherhood penalty. So the price you are paying in the moment you are getting a mother, and that is in Germany very high.
It's such a high price, Sabina. And I'd love it if you talk a little bit more about what you think needs to be fixed structurally, because you say fix the system, not the women. So what are the things that need to be put in place so that women can more comfortably go back to work full-time to secure themselves financially?
Yeah, so I'm really happy that not only I am saying that, because Claudia Goldin became the Nobel Prize for this statement as well. She did an amazing job by collecting all the data that shows that this system definitely has a very negative impact for women. And therefore, it's not up to us as a woman, because I also thought for years that it's only up to me and my management and organization skills and all that stuff. And this is something I always felt bad about. So then I thought, okay, how is it possible to work in full time with the circumstances we have? So it's a really complex topic, but I think what should change is politically wise here in Germany, especially, that we need a better career system for our children. So the kindergarten and school, sometimes we only have a kindergarten till 2 or 3 o'clock. And also the school system, there is no link between the school time. So school is starting at 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and then it's sometimes in primary school, it's just till 12 or 1 o'clock. So it's impossible to work in this short time. And I think we made this experience as well, Charlotte, right? Being neighbors and facing these situations. And therefore, we need schools that are holding our kids or carrying our kids for the full, at least till, I would say, till 3 or 4 o'clock. And we also need this link between working hours and school and kindergarten hours. So this must change in future, as well as the political system. So therefore, we need more highlights or more topics that also the fathers are going into part-time as well, and that they are doing their caring job that they definitely have, and that they also have a chance to stay still in their career paths, but nevertheless take also be a very active part as a father. So it should be normal that also a CEO is going into parental leave and leaving the company at, for example, 5 or 6 o'clock for being at home and eating the dinner together with the children, doing the homework with the children. So that should be the standard instead of the once in a lifetime situation of a CEO. I think that these are some topics that should change definitely, as well as the mindset. I think that is the hardest one. The deep traditional thinking that the mothers are responsible for education of their children and the fathers are the one who earn the money. I think that is the hardest one, at least here in Germany, because we still believe in this traditional role model, and therefore we need flexible work time and as well as working places. So home office, working in a hybrid setup, all these steps are helping us a lot to combine better the work-life balance for family and full-time working.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that answer. And a couple of things are coming up for me. First of all, that idea of a male CEO taking paternity leave as a role model. I don't think we've ever seen that in Germany. No. Wouldn't it be magnificent if we did? Yeah. And then as you were talking about things like work and kindergarten and school times matching, and also men having the freedom and also the lack of societal pressure to be able to take paternity leave, I started to think about neighboring EU countries or countries in Europe, because I think that France has kindergarten times and school times matched to working times. So
yeah,
I think it's much more efficient in France. And then I think in the Scandinavian countries, there's a lot less, it's not a status issue for men to take as long a paternity leave as their wives or partners take maternity leave. So we have examples around us.
We know that it's working, but nevertheless, we are not changing it, at least here in, so in some parts of the world, but at least also here in Germany, I think it's a pity because we are one of the richest OECD countries ever. So it doesn't make any sense for me to be honest, that we are so bad in all these statistics regarding part-time, regarding keeping women in a really small and tiny system. And as you mentioned, in the Scandinavian countries, it's really income. So it's really normal that the fathers are going also at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock to pick up the children. And there it's vice versa, I would say. So here it's really normal to stay in your job till 5, 6 o'clock. And there, you'll get the question, hey, why are you still here? You should pick up your kids and bring them to their hobbies instead of being still here. So there it's quite there it's standard that you are working like that. And I would say latest since COVID, we should know that it's working to have this flexible working hours, at least in all the areas where it fits. It fits not always. But I would say it's just a topic of being creative, to think how we can change this way of working and how we can get out the most of it with the digitalization as well as the automatization and as well as with the artificial intelligence. I think we can do here a lot to change, especially this system, to bring mothers as fast as fathers back to their financial independency and to their career development.
Yeah. It's amazing, actually, because so many people I talk to about new ways of leadership, which is my theme, talk about COVID as that moment where, like, the door opened and we saw a new world, and then COVID ended and those doors closed really fast. And it's such a, we just retreated back to the old ways within days, weeks and months, just back to the old ways of working. But COVID has shown us that it can be done. So I suppose that's inspiring on some level. Sabine, I did want to ask you about the difference between former West and former East Germany, because as I understand it, in the former East Germany, it was much more typical for mothers to work full-time and to put their children into full-time care. Does that difference between former East and former West still persist?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the numbers, definitely. So in, as well as in the data. So they're still better in all these topics. So working part-time and getting back much faster in full-time. I think also here, it's a bit complex. So also here, it makes sense to just have a deeper look. So the women there or the mothers there, yes, they went back very early into full-time working and having all the caring topics at home. So the care work at home was nevertheless up to them, most of the time at least. But the system itself, so there was a big match between the working hours and the kindergarten and school hours. But that is also a topic. I would say nowadays it doesn't make any sense to talk about full time is this. So we are talking full time about 40 hours a week, right? I would say nowadays that doesn't fit anymore. We definitely should come to an approach of 32, 35 hours. And then we are talking about full-time. And then we can match this full-time working hours with the school and kindergarten approach. So that would make sense. But as long as we are talking about 40 hours, it's definitely hard to do so. And here we are not talking about a career, right? So that is something that is very important for me. This is just staying financial independent and doing a development in your job. If we are talking about careers, then we are talking about 60 to 70 and even more hours. So even if we would have a 35 hour week or working week, then we would still not do a career. So this is still, and therefore you need to be present. So that was in the past like that, and I think it's still like that. And all these topics must be changed. So it's not about being present, it's about outcome, it's about results. So these are the topics we should keep an eye on instead of being present for 70 hours. So whenever someone is asking you, you are there. So, and because you can never combine that with the young years of your children. So they need that. They need you in this age, and I think it's very important that we give them our presence, our full presence in this time, because this is also the future of our society. So it definitely makes sense to keep an eye on them.
Yeah, that topic of being present for your children, but also focusing on outcomes and not presenteeism at work, has come up a lot in my interviews. It's come up a lot in the context of Gen Z. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my children who are now entering the workplace and their generation who require a working environment that focuses on outcomes and not on processes. So some of the shifts we're seeing, I think, are demographic shifts and will happen. They'll be kind of forced upon us. But not all of them, of course. Sabina, I wanted to ask you, how old was your youngest child when you went back to work full time?
She was 6 years old, and in the meanwhile, she's 11. So I never stopped full-time working since then. So since 5 years, I'm back as a full-time worker. And it was a hard battle also with myself, but as well with my husband and with my, and I would not say with my company. So I think there everything was fine. Yeah, there are still some people who are surprised when I'm saying, yeah, I'm a mother of four, and then, well, what? And you are working full-time, and then I'm saying, yeah, and I have to, because there's a big gap in my lifetime earning, in because I worked for 13 years in part-time and I was 4.5 years in parental leave. So that is something that has an impact on my financial income right now, as well as on my pension, and I think it's important to keep an eye on that. And as you mentioned, the Gen Z, I'm really happy that they are forcing us to think in different directions and also to overthink our values, so that we are definitely here on earth to work for life and not to live for work. And I think that's important that they treat us in this direction, and also is very uncomfortable, yes, but also for companies. But I think, so I also talked with my two oldest ones, and I said, yeah, I don't know if I would like to have children, because when I'm so educated and doing all that work and then getting stopped just because our companies and political systems are not able to hold us and to bring us forward in this time. And then I thought, this is going in the wrong direction, because if you already know intuitively that you would like to have a family, you should never get stopped just from the system. I think it makes more sense to be loud and uncomfortable against the system, so that we change that instead of not having a family. Because I think at the end of your days, you could be sad that you didn't make it in that area. So if you're crystal clear that children will not be a part of your life, then I think it's totally fine. But I know a lot of women who are still struggling, and who are asking themselves, hey, yes, intuitively I would say I would like to have children, but not under these circumstances. And therefore I would rather go with the wish of children instead of waiting till the system is changing.
Yeah, idea of being loud against the system and holding it to account is definitely what you're doing with your thought leadership and your speaking engagements and appearing on podcasts. And in a slightly different way, also what I'm doing with my book, We Need New Leaders, which is about embracing a new form of leadership. But I'm in the position that I'm now, I now work for myself so that I don't have the discomfort of an employer. And I wondered if your, how your employer or how you manage the sort of two worlds that you live in. Is it a sort of, is it a discomfort for you or for anyone at work that you are loud about the system?
Very good question. So there are, I'm pretty sure that there are some people who are definitely have a topic with that. And it's also fine because it's, I mean, it's especially for men, this entire work life or work family balance topic is a really private one. So that has nothing to do on a career platform like LinkedIn, for example. But for us as women, that's our living reality. So that's our life. And it's definitely different from what they are experiencing. And therefore, I think it's very important that we're also talking about this topic, although it seems, especially for men, that it's a private one. But this is exactly the mindset that we have to change to get to also change the system. But besides that, I also get a lot of feedback from women as well as men who are... who are thanking me for delivering all the numbers, who are taking the numbers and preparing themselves for their negotiation phases for a higher salary or whatever, and who are definitely grateful that I'm speaking out what is there with the data. So all of the topics I'm saying is definitely data driven. I think that's important that we show this data and that it's not only about the gender gap, that it's definitely about the lifetime earning gap, because this is much, much higher than just the gender gap. And therefore, I would say, we have for sure both sides in the company. And I think that's fine because that's the cultural change we need. So this is the discussion and the exchange we need, that we, so that it's not about there's the one people have right and the other ones are wrong. No, it's about the exchange and how can we come to, or how can we do it together to come in an, in a direction or in a way that fits for parents as well.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So you work as a change and transformation manager, yeah. But you're also living it out loud by showing people what a constructive debate can look like, and feeling accepting of different views and allowing those different views to show up, so that, because that's the only way we're going to affect change, is that if we actually talk about these things, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I would say I have three transformations in parallel, so a multi-transformation life. So the one thing is, so the biggest transformation I ever accompanied is definitely the one from my newborns to adults. So that is an amazing transformation where I put all in. So, and there are so many topics you also described in your book. So being authentic, definitely finding your voice, working on your reputation, having a good and very clear vision of yourself, how you would like to lead, especially through transformation, and bringing children from a newborn to an adult status. It's a lot about leading through transformation. It's always about being with yourself, although it's a lot having four or three children at home and everyone is doing something, but in general not doing what the rules says. So how do you deal with that? So the second transformation is then the other transformation is then the social transformation. So all the topics about the motherhood penalty. This is a social transformation I try to make visible, especially on LinkedIn, but then all the transformation that we are also doing in my company. So there it's a lot about digital transformation, agile transformation as well. But all these transformations have the same pattern. So it's always about having a clear picture of yourself, knowing your reputation, how you would like to look like, and always finding back in the biggest everyday business that you have all the time on your table. But nevertheless, still at the end of the day, still coming back to yourself. I think that is something that all the transformation, so this is a pattern that I see in all the transformations.
It's so interesting that you come to self-knowledge. I mean, that was something that I arrived at through my research in the book, that all the leaders that I interviewed, both emerging and established, all came with hard gained, wasn't easy to get there, hard gained self-understanding, self-compassion, incredibly in touch with their values, incredibly thoughtful about how they used language, and also very thoughtful about making space for dissenting voices, for constructive dialogue. You know, none of them were binary about their arguments, or there was, as you say, no right or wrong. It's about how do we discuss this in a constructive way so that we get to a place where there's space for change. And I wanted to ask you, Sabina, how do you think about your own leadership style?
My own leadership, yeah, that's a good question, because it's, like you said, it's a lot about self-reflection. And I learned that in parallel, I would say, when we set up the Agile Leadership Education Path in our company. And there I saw all the parallel ways to my own way of leading as a mother. And a very important part for myself was this active listening. There I realized, oha, I'm not really listening all the time. It's more about, okay, if you have so many topics on your plate, different topics, then it's much easier to just answer instead of asking back. Did I get you right? Did I understand it right? And when I realized that, I changed the way, as you said, leadership is language, that's for sure. And it's a big difference if you are leading through questions or leading through answers. But this change took me months to realize, even if it's very stressful in my daily life, do not just answer, or if you do so, apologize afterwards and ask, hey, did I get you right? This is the question you had, so how can we come to a good answer? And what shocked me the most, or what was the biggest aha moment, was definitely that the answer was always in my kids. So it was never about finding there, so that I am responsible to find the answers. They already had their answers. It was just about coming through to the answer through questions for myself. So, and that was an important part to learn. And that was something that then I directly took back into my working area. That also there as an agile leadership coach, as well as a change manager, I try to lead through questions. So asking to understand and not to answer. And that is still my mantra, I would say. And I'm always asking myself, what is my impact that the situation is like it is? And I would also say here at home, a lot of time it's my impact that a situation is escalating or not. It's not all on my children. And I think this is also very important, being so self-reflective and asking in the morning, so what can I do that the situations will be like this or that? And then in the evening, and what was my impact today that some situations went like that and others like that? I think that helps a lot in that regard.
Yeah, that's so lovely. And two things are coming up for me as you were talking. One is, you've said to me before, motherhood is a boot camp for leadership. And you've just made that so clear, the parallels between parenting and leading in your career. And also that asking about your own impact. So something that came up for me during my MSc in change leadership, and that I also mention in the book, is this idea of single loop and double loop learners. So single loop learners see a problem, bring the resources, fix the problem. So it's just one loop. Double loop learners see a problem, bring the resources, and then ask, what was my role in causing this problem? And I honestly believe that that is the core to the new leaders that we need. The leaders who ask, what was my role in causing this problem? What did I bring that caused this tension or this issue? And what can I do in future so that this doesn't happen again? And you've just articulated that so beautifully.
Yeah, but I only can confirm that, because I also think that's so important, having this empathy. So also thinking, okay, there is a topic or a problem or a challenge, but I have an impact on that. And even if I'm not playing actively a role in it, the way how my employees are thinking, acting, and solving topics and problems is, so there's definitely a part of my leadership style in it, because they thinking about, okay, how is our leader reacting about that, or how is would she or he say about this or that situation. And I think the self-reflection and then having the chance to be very empathetic and clear, I think clarity is very important in this very fast and complex world, to give some clarity and guidance. And it's like I said, it's not about being right or wrong, it's about what works in my environment and where do we have to do some adjustments and improvements. And it's okay to redecide or to adjust a decision as long as you ask yourself, so as long as you are bringing in all the perspectives of your teams, hopefully diverse teams, because then you have a better chance to get a sustainable solution and to have these loops. And I think that's definitely very important, to always inspect and adapt. That is the thing I like the most about agile ways of working, to inspect and adapt and to do it just a bit better than the last time, than the last loop.
Yeah, I love that. And you talked about clarity, and I think Brené Brown says clarity is kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And if I think back to the leaders that I worked with when I was in corporate, I definitely think those who were clear were much easier to work with or for, even if they were very demanding, than those who kept things murky. Because when leaders keep things murky or muddy, you don't understand where you stand. And I think, so I really do believe that clarity is kindness.
Yeah, and you always have this feeling of a hidden agenda. So you think, okay, yes, he or she said that, but it seems that there is a bit more. And this feeling is, then you are so insecure in a lot of situations, and that does not help at all, especially in these complex situations. So there, the clarity you have, you should use that, because at least that's one stable point or a stable guideline, guardrail in your team and in your way of leading. And you should give this transparency and clarity for your team, because it also helps them to develop or to define better solutions.
Sabina, you said having diverse teams gives you a better chance of getting to sustainable solutions, which I love. And, you know, we've seen since the beginning of the year a lot of pushback against diversity, equity, inclusion in the US, and it's sort of starting to leak out into the rest of the world. Are you seeing it, that pushback in Germany too?
Yeah, I would also say it's already in Germany. So it's as well, so it's here as well. And I mean, and we are, in the meantime, while we are such a global earth, so everything is connected to everything. Therefore, I would say even more now it's important to have a clear attitude and to show in which or what matters to you, in which direction you should go. I also see these pushbacks, but if we would go now on a meter level, and then I would say, okay, it's one of these natural transformation loops that we came, I would say, far in all the topics of diversity as well as of belonging. And now there is this fear, especially of the people who love to lead through authority and also through fear. And now they take the opportunity to go one or two steps back. So it's like these transformation loops. So we are now in this loop where we have the feeling that we are going back, but then to come once again even stronger out of this transformation. At least that's my hope, with all the learnings then that we made. And I think also it's a lot of fear in the people who are leading through authority, and they are definitely scared that these diverse topics or the way the mindset of diversity is rolling over them, so to say, so that they feel overruled by all of that, and they do not have any answers for that. They do not know how to handle it, and that's at least my impression. And therefore, they try to do it like that. Yeah, but feeling these pushbacks does not feel very good.
You talked about leaders who lead with authority and who are fear-based. And as you know, that my mission with We Need New Leaders is to present a new style of leadership. And I did that by interviewing 40 emerging and established leaders who come from diverse backgrounds, who have diverse identities, and who are leading in a new way. But we still have this thing in our brain. We still have this archetype that sits in our brain of what a leader looks like and what a leader sounds like. And what do you think, Sabina, we can do collectively and individually to change that archetype in our heads?
That's a big question, definitely. So collectively, I would say stop rewarding sameness and embrace non-linear careers. And I know how hard that is, but also the care experience is part of leadership and should be in future. And therefore, we also have to change this mindset of, first of all, it's about economy. And then there is nothing for a long time. And then we are talking about community and planet and all that stuff. And I think we should definitely have in our focus the planet. It's all about the planet, how to save the planet so that we have a chance to stay at the planet. And then it's about economy and people. But I would say people first and then economy. But yeah, that's another topic. So therefore, embrace the nonlinear careers. And individually, it's, I would say walk your talk, right? Whenever you have the chance to talk about your privileges and then do it and really create the space to go into the exchanges. Yes, it's not always comfortable also to get all these pushbacks. That's for sure. But I think that's an important part of the cultural change to also change this way of thinking and to get... To get rid of this way of thinking, a leader must be present, a leader must be loud, a leader must be strong and all that stuff. I think there is more in it or in leaders like you described them, that it's definitely all about a leader's empathetic, a leader is asking a lot of questions, a leader is always putting him or herself into the shoes of others. Yeah, and also to generate followers, so to lead through the language. And I think that is something that is, there's a lot of room of improvement, I would phrase it like that. So I see many leaders speaking. Some of them are doing a great job also in storytelling, but others are still stucking in nowhere, I don't know, or perhaps are more experts instead of leaders. And we have tons of experts on leadership positions because there was no expert career so far. So leadership was the only one. And this is also a very, very, very big challenge for transformation. If you have too many experts on a leadership position, it's nearly impossible to do a transformation because an expert is very different. So is thinking very differently from a leader. So leader is really people oriented and experts are more topic oriented. So, and they are sticking very close to their topics. And that's okay. So it's totally okay. So there's no judgment in it, but it's a different way of leading people through transformation.
Yeah, and as you talked about that, it took my mind back to the beginning. As we change the leadership archetype in our brains, we're also at the same time changing our archetypes around parenting and around motherhood and what that needs to look like. And those two are probably extremely uncomfortable for people, but happening on a kind of parallel path, I should imagine. Sabina, now we get to the questions I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
A book recommendation. So Invisible Woman by Caroline Perez. I hope I pronounced it well. So it changed definitely the way how I see the world right now. I think it's a must read for anyone who thinks equality already is done. So therefore, I highly recommend with all my heart this book.
Thank you so much. Such a great book. What are your three tips for emerging leaders who are coming into the workplace now? They come from diverse backgrounds. They may have diverse identities. What are your three tips to them for landing, keeping, or creating their dream leadership roles?
The first one is definitely don't wait to be invited. Build your own stage and be very loud on your stage. You are allowed to. The second one is speak up, even if it's uncomfortable. And also to know if it is uncomfortable, you are doing it right. So When it's not uncomfortable, then you are still in your comfort zone. And the third one is know your worth, especially financially. So that's especially for women. We do not need to be financial dependent from our husbands or from social system. We are also worth to own our own money or to, so that we are allowed to have children and being financially independent, as well as having a career. These are the three tips I would give, definitely. But I think the first one is the most important one. So don't wait to be invited. Just use your voice and build your own stage. And I think nowadays it's easier than it was ever. You have tons of social media platforms. Just choose one. Go with that. Set some goals. So for example, so my goal was definitely making 5,000 followers on LinkedIn in the first year. And it was really, the first goal was for me making 1,000 followers in the first year. And it was a very heavy one, but it went out great. And that's the way how I'm working. I'm always setting myself some goals. And then I'm thinking, okay, should I go only with LinkedIn or are there other platforms? But just choose the one who fits the best for you and then build your own stage and don't give up.
Oh, those are such beautiful tips. Thank you very much. And Sabina, what brings you joy?
I think the biggest joy is laughing with my family, especially with my kids. And we had this moment, I think it was yesterday when we ate some, so at dinner, and they laughed a lot about the rules we had 5 or 6 years ago about, I even don't know about what, but they found it so funny what we did as parents. And I thought, okay, that was always the vision that I had, that we are sitting together at a table and our kids are laughing about their childhood. I mean, they are still children, but nevertheless about the early years. And so that we are still all together. And also my husband and myself couldn't understand why they are laughing about these topics. We definitely enjoyed how they talked about their child, so these early years. And this is something that makes me really happy and that I also enjoy a lot.
Well, what a place to end your children's happy laughter. Sabina Rutt, thank you for joining me on Speech Bubbles.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.